This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Wonder Woman Bloodlines. Fanboy Special Edition Wonder Woman Bloodlines. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Ryan Haupt.
Hello.
The Animated Brain Trust. We're here to discuss Wonder Woman Bloodlines, the 36th DC Universe Animated Original Film. There'll be spoilers, so if you don't want to be spoiled, you can stop now. What's interesting, guys, is that... Well, okay, let me ask you the question. Is this an origin film?
Oh... Yeah, ish.
Kind of.
Yeah, I think it is.
I mean, yeah.
It's an origin for this new shared animated universe they've been running for a little while. Like, because the last Wonder Woman standalone movie was also an origin, but it wasn't in the continuity of, you know, this costume, which is the only way I can tell anymore.
This is directed by Justin Copeland and Sam Liu, who've done a lot of these, written by Marguerite Scott, who's a comic writer. There have been three Wonder Woman films, two animated, one live action, and they've all basically been origin films.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, that mascara. Cool. And it's, you know, it's slightly different than the other two presentations of Themyscira and how the origin goes. But so it's an origin story with a time skip.
Okay. So there's a long cold open before the credits.
18 minutes, I checked, because I was like, hey.
Yeah, that was weird.
Steve Trevor lands at Themyscira, rescued by Wonder Woman. I like origins. I always defend origins. I know people, readers are sick of them because they know them backwards and forwards, but I always find that usually how they came to be is the most interesting story for a hero. But it's just weird that all three Wonder Woman films have been either origin stories or partially origin stories, and it's just weird.
Yeah, I also enjoy origin stories. Like, I enjoy Superman, like the Superman origin story. It's a great story, and there's so many different things that you can do with it, and they have played with it. And, you know, this isn't exactly the same origin story, although it is, you know, it's the same beats. Like, Steve Trevor somehow ends up on Themyscira. Wonder Woman has to vouch for him.
He's fighting the Germans. No, that's the other one.
Yeah, this time it's in the modern day. Well, I guess that's what they had to do. They felt that they had to modernize it.
Yeah, it ties in with Justice League. So he's fighting an invasion from Apocalypse.
So there's parademons instead of,
I thought that actually made sense.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
So tying it in, that is FY23.
I think the origin fatigue with Wonder Woman is that there aren't other Wonder Woman stories. Like, there are other Superman stories that we've gotten that aren't Superman origin stories. So since, like, the ratio is just better here, all of the Wonder Woman stories we're getting are an origin story with a little bit extra.
Right.
And so if we maybe got some other things, like some other Wonder Woman stories, that now we get her in Justice League stories, yes.
Right.
But not for same. Solo, like, Wonder Woman stories, we just, there aren't other ones in these movies or the live action.
Right. So she rescues Steve Trevor from being trapped on Themyscira, and they both go back to Man's World. And the film opens up with a 5 years ago title. But then it never really is quite clear when we are in the now. You know, we jump forward in time where she's clearly just still pretty new to Man's World. And she's sent to go live with Dr.
Julia Capitellis
from the comics and her daughter, Vanessa. And then she's there for a long time living with them. And then eventually we're in the present. She changes costumes twice. She starts off in the classic Wonder Woman costume with the, or at least from the film, the one now with the skirt,
right.
The warrior skirt. And then in the middle, she changes into the current animated version that's got the half pants and a lot of blue. So clearly time has passed, and I guess we assume by the end we're in now?
Although yeah.
They never really make it clear.
It's sort of like now we're in the established.
Except she does a dramatic costume change back into the original Themyscira costume, and it's never explained why tactically that had to happen.
I guess she's going back to Themyscira, so she wants to be in the clothes she left in.
You know, I do that for all of my important trips.
Every time I go home, I wear the clothes I left
in.
They
don't fit anymore.
Yep. I don't want to confuse anyone.
Right. Who are you again? Dad. He was wearing different pants. So, I mean, it's basically, this felt very much like everything plus the kitchen sink.
Yeah. That
did you like it?
I was going to say a mess, but that's a more, yeah.
I didn't dislike it, Ryan. I didn't like it either. I thought it was down the middle.
I didn't like it.
I thought it was below the line of what I would call the middle, and about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way through, I just started texting Josh about something else and got very distracted with my text conversation with Josh.
I did kind of drift as well.
I mean, I did too, but it was just weird that it was so not focused. You think Silver Swan's the bad guy, Silver Swan being Vanessa, the jealous daughter of the doctor she's living with, who Wonder Woman steals all her thunder, and then we've got Dr. Cyber, and then we have Dr. Poison, and then it's Medusa.
Giganta's in there for a minute.
Cheetah's in there, and Giganta, and it's like, who?
And then Medusa's, like,
the main villain all of a sudden, and then
juicing up, and it, like, has whatever Giganta and Cheetah were putting into themselves.
It's like whatever's going on in DC right now. And then also you have Veronica Kale. There's, like, six villains. Which isn't necessarily bad, but you never got the sense of who the bad guy was. Who was really the bad guy?
I think it's cool that they're using a lot of Wonder Woman specific characters and villains and trying to give them all something to do. I think that's laudable. I also think it's cool that it's the flipped ratio. It's a very female heavy ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't bring in like Maxwell Lord or like some of the like other, you know, like dudes that they could have like, let's make it, Ares. Let's do this Villainy Inc. thing and have it be a lot of interesting women characters from the Wonder Woman lore. But I think it's too much. It feels like it's like if I'm only going to get one chance to do a Wonder Woman story and I'm going to throw everything at it. And the other thing is, I think I wish there was more about like the Villainy Inc. stuff with Giganta and Cheetah and then Doctors Cyber and Poison rather than the Medusa stuff, because they've gone so heavy on the Greek hierarchy stuff with Wonder Woman lately.
They seem unable to tell a story with Wonder Woman that does not involve the Greek gods. They haven't done it in like 10 years. Even in the comics. You know, I really enjoyed the Azzarello, mostly Chang run, but it was still all about her and the Greek gods. Mm-hmm. I like her as a superhero. And so you're right. Like, if it had just been her against Cheetah and Silver Swan and whoever, I would have been really into it. But then it's all, of course, it's all about Medusa. And it's just like, well, she's also a superhero. In addition to being part of the pantheon, like, maybe just tell some superhero stories involving Wonder Woman. That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem incapable of doing that. It's not the only thing that makes her interesting. And that's, I get the feeling that's all they think about her, is that the only thing that makes her interesting is she's Princess Diana. Yeah, the parts that were most interesting to me were the Cheetah Giganta stuff. I'll tell you what I did like is I thought the animation was really good, and I thought some of the fight scenes were really well done, and I was really impressed by the way some of these were directed. The opening sword fight between Diana and her mother, I thought, had some really incredible angle work.
It looked nice.
Some things got canted, and like it felt really dynamic. And then at the end, there was one shot where the Amazons are shooting arrows, and it was like a really sort of Peter Jackson-y shot of the arrows coming at the screen. Yeah. I thought that was really cool looking. I thought it was a really nice looking film with some fun action sequences. I really hated Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
He was really bad.
He was like quippy and sarcastic in ways that just never worked. The goatee was a bad choice.
He just looked weird.
Well, he's got that in the comics. That's they're playing off his look now. Mm. I feel like they're almost trying to give him, voiced by Jeffrey Donovan, he's a fine actor, but he didn't really.
Burn Notice.
Yeah. What is Burn Notice?
What is Burn Notice?
He just felt like they tried to give him the personality of Chris Pine.
Sure.
But Chris Pine was legitimately funny and charming, whereas this felt like C-3PO in the prequels, where every time we cut to him, there was a bad pun or a bad joke. And I really hated that. The voice acting, I thought, overall was strong, other than him.
Yeah, I thought it was. Rosario Dawson is the big name. Otherwise, it's a lot of like video game voiceover actors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like people who do this like all the time,
which is good.
And I prefer when they do this rather than the stunt casting when they get like. Rosario Dawson has done like. All of the Wonder Woman movies.
Except for the first one. Originally, it was Michelle Monaghan.
No. She has played Artemis.
Of the modern continuity, it was Michelle Monaghan in the first Justice League movie.
But I just mean she is not that she has played Wonder Woman every time, but she has been in a lot of these.
Yeah, she has, yeah.
And she has played like Artemis, I think, was in the first Wonder Woman movie,
right.
Which is one of my favorites of this line. Although I have to go back and like revisit that because it's been so long. And I just keep saying that it's my favorite, but I barely remember it at
this point. Paul, before the next show, I need you to watch all of them again.
What if we do just like a greatest hits? What if we pick like
four? Well, you're going to have to watch them all to make sure which ones are the greatest ones.
Oh, man.
So
that's a fair point, but
rank all 36 anyways, right now.
I think this is sort of like because Wonder Woman is so the fish out of water character. I feel like Rosario Dawson is kind of wasted on this because she just very stilted lines.
Got a fish map. Crucial plot point in this movie. Map of where.
Yes, that's true.
Well, in the beginning, when she goes to Earth, not Earth. She's always on Earth. When she goes to Man's World.
It's a man's world.
She's very, like, all of a sudden can't speak proper English.
Right, she's looking around and she's thinking the geography of DC in this scene make no sense.
But then, like, previously when she meets Steve Trevor on the Mascara, she speaks fine.
Right. So
it's like all of a sudden she lost, like, half of her vocabulary and she's speaking. Like,
it's that whatever memory wipe they do to make her forget where the Mascara is, it's a little indiscriminate, unfortunately.
It was weird. There was a lot of things where I was like, why did that happen?
Yeah.
And which is a bummer, because like you said, Paul, I liked the first Wonder Woman movie a lot.
A couple of things I liked. I'll see if I can maybe say some positive things. Purple Ray is great.
Yeah.
I'm always glad when any larger budget than your typical comic story leans into some Silver Age zany wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need the Purple Ray to come back as like an important Deus Ex Machina, or however Ron says it wrong, at the end of the movie.
Chekhov's purple...
Yeah, I just thought it was cool. Like, okay, Steve got beat up in his plane crash. We can Purple Ray him. Like, I that's all I needed of it, but I appreciated that. I know I was joking about the fish map thing, but I thought that was kind of a fun device to map out where the Mascara was hiding. I didn't anticipate that we were going to get an introduction to Ferdinand the Minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all right.
Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
Makes a mean-looking salad. And there's a little bit of LGBTQIA representation. Vaguely hinted at with the I can't remember the sidekick character's name, Steve Trevor's.
Well, not vaguely. I mean,
Etta Candy?
Etta, she was very openly a lesbian.
Yeah, she was saying, introduce me to some Amazons.
Yeah.
And then I thought Cheetah getting tied up with the lasso and trying to talk her way out of it, but not being able to lie about her motivations and whether or not she was worthy or deserved to be let out was pretty funny.
Right. I thought that was good.
Yeah. Paul, what did you like?
What did I like? I talked about... I said things I liked already.
Pass.
<laughs> I
have, Paul, watched the first Wonder Woman within the last couple of years, and it did hold up. It is good. And obviously, the live-action film is terrific, and it was a bummer.
Right.
And it was a bummer to see the origin. I mean, I think the reason why I mentioned it was still kind of the origin story, because she gets the invisible jet towards the end. So it's still kind of, it's still introducing the elements of Wonder Woman throughout the entire film. It was just a strange choice, a real strange choice. It's not like we needed an origin for this Wonder Woman. She's been in these movies now for years, this version of her.
Here's the thing I like. I don't think they execute on it well enough because there's so much going on, but the conceit of this young woman being very jealous of Wonder Woman and that stewing over time, and then getting to see Wonder Woman like so positively represented, like she's a superhero. And when she first met her, she was not. And like to see her, like, this is this woman that has very little context for like our social cues and culture and stuff. And we've had awkward run-ins in this house that's too small for all of us to be living there. And I'm trying to like figure out who I am as a person. And then I live with Wonder Woman, who one day says, like, I'm going to be a superhero now. I'm going to go off and do what that guy in Gotham's doing. And so that's interesting. And then, of course, like, she goes full tilt into evil. One of the things that, like, kind of shocked me in the movie is, like, Silver Swan is on the cover. They're setting her up to be the ultimate, you know, the big bad of this movie. And then Wonder Woman takes her out, like, instantly.
Right.
Like, her debut. Not that every movie has to be structured the same way, but traditionally, that's where she would kick Wonder Woman's ass.
Right.
And Wonder Woman would be reeling from that. But she shows up and Wonder Woman takes her down like she's nothing. And then she gets sidelined in a tube for most of the movie and then comes back and gets sidelined again by Wonder Woman. Like, Wonder Woman keeps beating her. And it's just the back and forth isn't, it doesn't feel right. So I was just real, I was like, really? Like, they give her all these upgrades. And then it turns out that she's just kind of trash. Like, she's like no good at this. I don't think that's any kind of point they're trying to make. It's just that happens to be the structure of the movie. And Wonder Woman needs to keep rolling on. So this girl is a victim through the entire thing. And she never gets to have that moment where she's superpowered over Wonder Woman and gets to take her down.
Yeah.
Even a peg.
That was the part I was enjoying the most, was that very beginning when she was trying to live with Wonder Woman and feeling completely inadequate. And that, to me, was the... And I hate being the person that reviews a film and says, well, they should have done it this way. But I feel like the interesting movie would have been the slow burn of her in the background while Wonder Woman comes into her own as a hero. And then then the rest, the third act, is their confrontation. And you can lose everything else. Because everything else was not as emotionally interesting. Because obviously that's the whole point, because they come together at the end. She's gone for good portions of the movie as Wonder Woman's fighting Cheetah and Dr. Cyber and Dr. Poison. And it just felt like they lost the chance to really roll her out over the course of a longer period of time than the sort of 5 minutes of growth. It was weird pacing and a weird movie.
I also felt like the stakes of the movie were kind of undone. I know I said I liked the introduction of the Purple Ray because when I first saw it, I thought, oh, it's neat that they're using the Purple Ray. But the fact that when they defeat Medusa, everyone that was turned to stone gets transformed back and the Purple Ray is able to heal any and all wounds, including Wonder Woman's eyes that she had to self-blind herself from. So one, the people who got smashed while they were in rock form, that must be horrific when they turn back.
Right.
Just really gross. And then two, like, because you have the Purple Ray, there's no consequences to anything that happened in the movie. Like, Steve gets brought back. Silver Swan gets cured of the virus that she infected herself with, and Wonder Woman's eyes get healed. And so it's just like, okay, why did we go through all this? What was the point?
Well, yeah, that's comics, though.
That reminds me of, speaking of Chris Pine, the end of Star Trek Into Darkness, right, where they come up with a cure for death.
Right. Why do you have to do that, Paul? Why do you have to remind me of this?
Man. I had this question in the third act. Is Medusa, other than just her scale and being able to like step on stuff, just the eye thing, is Medusa more of a threat bigger or at her regular size?
I had the same thought about Giganta, because Giganta makes herself giant in a building she can barely then stand up in. And I'm like, well, that's not a good way to fight. In like a half crouch.
Yeah, and like in a warehouse.
Your head on the rafters. Like,
why did they bring Dr. Julia into the warehouse? It makes no sense. Yeah, why would Steve Trevor do that?
You're totally unarmed and untrained in this fight. You come in to the battle with us. So yeah. Are you asking if
I'm saying, like, is it harder to avoid the gaze of
can she look bigger if she's
like yeah, I don't
look around like, better?
Is it harder to avoid the gaze of a thing that's that much higher than, like, you're not generally looking up? Like, you could just look at her ankles and just keep fighting her ankles.
I mean, I feel
and
like
not have to worry about meeting her gaze.
Or does her gaze sweep over a larger area?
Right. I mean, some people might be extra spooked out by those really big snakes on her head instead of just the regular size snakes.
I mean, there is the extra threat of a bigger creature. Like, she's like a kaiju now. But, like,
but if she also has a bigger visual range, it should be easier to lock eyes with. Right? Like, it should be a double-edged sword.
Right.
Yeah, no, I hadn't thought of that, Paul. Maybe I haven't seen Medusa in the comics for a while, but I felt like there was a vague Kirby-ness to this Medusa design. Yes, no, maybe. There were some glowing circles in the armor.
Sure, there's lines. Anytime there's circles, that's Kirby.
Or Hickman.
It's so hard because he's such a part of the DNA of just superheroes in general. And so I wouldn't say like Thor Ragnarok levels of, you know, Kirby homage, but
no, I didn't. I mean, I'm not saying it's not there. I didn't think about it.
I didn't like.
I needed to think about something, Connor.
I get you.
I was getting pretty bored with it.
I was thinking about dinner.
I didn't like the Medusa design because it uses the really cartoony looking snakes. Mm. Like, I would have preferred the snakes to look like more natural. I don't know, scarier that way.
Well, this was a bummer.
Middling.
Yeah,
barely.
I think it was middling. I think there were a lot of bad things about it, but that's just my opinion on it.
Listen, guys, this was no Suicide Squad assault on Arkham. I'll tell you that for free.
Either way. Like, at either end of the spectrum, it was like neither as good as you thought that was or as bad as we thought that was.
Right down the middle. See, he told you, right down the middle.
Yeah, right.
It's a bummer that you guys watch it digitally, because now you don't get to see the showcase shorts that they've
reissued. That's really unfair. Like, just
stick it on
there. So I
texted you guys about this, because I even went to DC Universe. I was willing to sign up for a trial if I could stream the DC animated showcase shorts, and there's not even an option there. And so I'm very frustrated in what they think they're doing with these.
Well, they're using them as an enticement to spend money on the Blu-rays, which is what I did.
I don't want physical media. Don't want it.
You don't want it until they take it away.
I want physical media of things that I like.
Yeah.
Like, I still buy physical media. I just bought the big Criterion Godzilla set. I'm very excited about it.
When they take it away from me, I'm going to be like Christian Bale and Gerard Butler. I'm just going to perform Star Wars for the children live on stage. We won't need it.
Well, I'm just going to keep watching my discs then.
It'll be a little bit more like Be Kind, Rewind.
Your discs are going to have all sorts of Jedi rocks and extra CGI stuff in it, whereas my version with Gerard Butler will be pure.
It's possible I have bootlegs of the original ones, but that would be against the law.
Send them to me.
So now Ryan's breaking his promise. If you remember in the last episode, he promised he would watch Shard and Rock and talk about it.
I tried so hard, you guys.
So on the last film,
I did not try it. I was just waiting until I was like, Ryan, send me a link to something. And
I spent probably a half hour Googling. Like, I tried a lot of different things, and the main thing that comes up is just the news story saying this will be a thing that's included in the DVD, and then no other information.
A half hour Googling is a lot for Ryan. He's a big DC lobbyist these days, and so he doesn't have a lot of time for that.
Not technically a lobbyist.
I know.
Batman Hush had the Sergeant Rock short, and Wonder Woman Bloodlines had the Death short, Death from Sandman. Sergeant Rock, I was really excited for, and then it took on a whole supernatural element, and I was less interested.
Yeah.
So it starts off as a traditional Sergeant Rock story in World War II, and then he gets teamed up.
I got confused for a second. I thought you meant the Death one had a supernatural element. Connor.
Yeah. Sergeant Rock teams up with, like, Frankenstein and, you know, like, all those.
The Monster Squad.
Oh.
And then they fight Nazi monsters, and I understand.
The
You're not
real
gonna
Howling Commando.
Yes, Connor, Nazis were monsters.
You're not going to have a straight-up World War II animated short in front of a superhero movie. I understand. I was kind of hoping they were, but I understand they weren't going to do that. So I was just a little bummed. But I really liked the Death one.
Okay.
Written by J.M. DeMatteis. It was about an artist, a failed artist, who has been hounded by demons his whole life. Both literal and figurative demons. You know, he's got these demons that appear to tear his self-esteem down and tear his confidence down.
Okay.
And then he meets Death, and he paints her. And it was a really nice little short about this guy vanquishing his demons through death. He has to die to do it, but he does it. I thought it was really nice. I thought it was a really, really nice short. I actually watched it twice. I enjoyed it more than Sergeant Rock.
Visually, was it sort of similar to the Wonder Woman feature, or was it like totally its
own? No, there's the same style. They're all the sort of the same
style. It's the same style? Yeah. Okay.
And then I think the next film is going to feature Adam Strange, I believe. I believe that's the plan. So it's too bad. I mean, I understand why they do it. It's an enticement. It's probably why they brought them back, as an enticement to get people to buy the discs. It's a bummer. You can't see them if you download the film digitally. No, I'm sorry. The next one I think is Phantom Stranger by Bruce Timm, and then Adam Strange. And then the 20-minute Death in the Family one they're planning on, which is interesting.
And what are they doing for the feature-length ones?
Well, the next one, which I watched a little story about, is Red Sun. And it actually looks awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be I've been talking about this for years, of wanting that as an adaptation. But yep. The last two have been such duds that I'm nervous.
Well, I mean, this is one of the off-brand ones now, right? So it's not in the continuity. We've, for the most part, been enjoying those. And this one's cool. They've all got Russian accents. Jason Isaacs is playing Superman.
Ooh.
It's got Wonder Woman, it's got Batman, it's got Hal Jordan. It looks really interesting. It looks very different. You know, Stalin's a major character in it. At the very least, it's going to be a very unusual, I mean, we've all read it, but it's a very different story than what we've been watching in this series.
So I think the last ones that we really liked were The Death and Reign of Superman.
Yes, we liked those.
I think those were pretty strong.
We liked Gotham by Gaslight.
Gods and Monsters.
And Gotham by Gaslight was very good.
And we like Gods and Monsters a lot.
I like Gods and Monsters a lot.
That's going back. Like, how many years ago was that?
Yeah, but that was one of the off-brand ones.
Okay.
So, that one looks interesting. The animation is not quite Tim version.
Wait, what's off-brand? Oh, it's outside of the
continuity.
52
yeah.
ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
We didn't love the Fatal Five one.
No.
But Red Sun looks fun. It's all full of Russian action and
I like the Fatal Five one, okay.
We don't need to relitigate Fate of Five.
So who's playing Bernie Sanders in the Red Sun?
Justice League Dark follows after that, which is the sequel to the last Justice League Dark.
We liked that one.
I think we did like that one.
That might have been in continuity.
It was in continuity in this one as well.
Ooh, Dietrich Bader is playing Lex Luthor.
Yeah, Dietrich Bader is playing Lex Luthor in Red Sun. And then we need to mention that, because we need to correct this from last time, Superman Man of Tomorrow, the scheduled third upcoming film, is not adaptation of the Azzarello Jim Lee story.
It's not.
Which we spent a good 5 minutes talking about last time.
We did.
Someone commented, and it was a helpful comment. Thank you, commenter.
Yes, it seems like it might be a Superman Year One situation, but there's not a lot of information on it.
Oh, they're just using the name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, the name of the Brian Azzarello story arc was apparently For Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, so they're just using the Tomorrow.
So we just misremembered the not very
there's well, not like, a comic called Superman Man of Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
A comic, but I don't know that there's a specific arc. And I think we were thinking that the Brian Azzarello Jim Lee arc was called Man of Tomorrow, but it was just called For Tomorrow. And so our interpretation that was
what's
what
the Alan Moore one? What do you get for whatever the man happened? No, tomorrow. Well,
he's got two that you're trying. What do you get for the man who has everything? And whatever happened to the man of tomorrow?
What do you get for the man today that you could get him tomorrow?
Which would be bonkers
to adapt.
There was a series called Superman, The Man of Tomorrow in 1995. It ran for 16 issues.
Who was the creative team on that?
Roger Stern wrote the first 10. Louis Simonson wrote the next 4. And then J.M.D. Matias wrote the last one. And it featured art by, Tom Grummett, Paul Ryan, Ryan Suk, and Georges Gianti.
Is there any way that this is related to that?
I would be very surprised. I'd be very surprised. This was like long-haired, flowing, mullety Superman.
I'm going to have to spend a lot of time thinking about what my answer will be for my ultimate wish list adaptation now that they're doing Red Sun.
That's right, and I'm excited. I mean, this is a great Superman story. This is for years one of the stories I've always said people should check out. It's a great Elseworlds story.
It's nice and self-contained. It really works for something like this.
It's only 3 issues, which I don't know that a lot of people remember that it's actually quite short as a comic, but I mean, it really crams a lot in there in terms of big ideas, cool things that you could play with.
A lot of great characters.
Mm-hmm.
If I recall, a great ending. I need to reread it before we watch
there, it. It is a great ending, and it
ending
also
was cool.
It includes maybe the greatest alternative universe, Batman.
Because of the hat.
God, I think he's got the fuzzy hat with the bat ears.
Yeah. He's got it in the animatics.
I have a fuzzy hat like that. Should I sew bat ears on it?
You can't hurt.
Can you go to a convention soon? No, you should go to one of your lobbyist conventions in...
Or your next meeting.
So.
Closed hearing on the Hill.
Take whatever hat I was wearing off. All my hearings have been open. I haven't been to a closed hearing yet. I mean, sometimes I have to register, but, you know.
What are they hiding? It's a star chamber.
I'll tell you. I got all the notes. I'll tell you.
Wonder Woman Bloodlines. We're disappointed. That's fair to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
Disappointed and just bored.
Yeah.
When I realized, like, oh, it's an origin story. We've had two really good. It's not like there were two bad ones.
Right.
That came before this. It was like there were two really good ones.
To me, it's less
like, let's
that,
do it again.
But it's that now we're at 100% origin with Wonder Woman. Three films, three origin stories. So now 100% of these movies have been about the origins. That, to me, is the real problem. Do something else now. And then, you know, they do the standard tease the next story situation at the end, but we'll see if that ever happens.
I don't necessarily want that story. Why did she give up her sword?
Yeah, they did tease that Dr. Crane was going to be the next big villain, and I saw that, and I was like, I don't care.
Like, she doesn't seem like much of a threat. Like, they're very bad in this movie at presenting what should be a threat as threats. Like, Wonder Woman just knocks things down, and so there's no drama there.
I mean, she's very powerful, Paul.
She is, and she should look strong. But, like, Veronica Kale, basically, she's like, I'm teasing this sequel. And, like, so Veronica Kale should look, like, very menacing and, like, much more intimidating than she did.
So here's the thing. With this film, we have officially had more films after Flashpoint than before.
That's a weird metric.
How's the comic continuity doing in the post-Flashpoint?
Well, what's interesting is that, if you recall, the Flashpoint film came only 1 year after Flashpoint. They very closely mirrored what was happening in the comics, but we have not had the same kind of updating to the world that they've had in the comic book world. It's like these movies are still existing from 2011 in DC.
Right. It's weird.
And it's been 8 years and a lot's happened.
Was when she gets into the Themyscira like armor again, is that like, I'm done with that?
Maybe.
That was so 2011. I'm done with that.
I mean, I still submit that her redesign was the least offensive of all the redesigns.
We've said that of all of them, yeah. For
yeah,
sure.
No, I just, you know, you never know what people need to be reminded of.
It's so not a bad redesign, but then when she gets back in her almost classic costume, you're like, yes, that's the good stuff.
Were the Flash or the Green Lantern costumes that bad?
Green Lantern, yes, because he's got the glowy lines on his like shoulders, and
I think Flash had lines too. They're always trying to put lines on Flash, which he does not need. Costume is basically perfect. Stop it.
All right, so that was Wonder Woman Bloodline.
We doing a rating?
Why is it even called Bloodline? Just because it was Silver Swan was the daughter of a person.
Someone was a daughter of a person, yes.
Don't introduce this new idea now at the end.
Sorry. I feel like the film introduced it.
I know, but you're right. There's no reason why it was called Bloodlines.
Okay. Just checking in.
All right, so the only downside is that... Oh, like there's a lot of downsides.
It's about mothers and daughters. That's
Superman Red Son did not have a release date on it.
Okay.
It just said, look for it at the end of the featurette. It didn't even say soon. It just said, look for it.
Look for it. And once you find it, look at it. For
like
the
under my couch
time.
Cushions? Or
so it's in next year, 2020.
Yes, it says, according to the latest press, Red Son, Apocalypse War, and Man of Tomorrow will be the three films in 2020.
What if Man of Tomorrow is secretly a DC 1 million?
Maybe.
We can hope.
I think it's a year one story.
Yeah, that's the opposite.
Yeah. So, all right.
The opposite of 1 million.
Of DC 1 million is, yeah.
All right, until Superman Red Sun, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan. Drive me crazy, said you won't stay with me. Blood, sweat, and murder. Black luck and trouble. Handful of sorrow. And a whole lot of trouble now. Blood, sweat, and murder. Black luck and trouble. Handful of sorrow. And a whole lot of trouble now. Buzz, sweat, and murder.